Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Healing Circle, which is a panel composed of spiritual teacher Kat Edwards and myself, a former social worker. We come together every week for topical discussions in which we share our experience, strength, and hope about everyday life. From depression to connection, we cover all the issues you feel and see as you walk life's sacred journey. Listeners are encouraged to call in and contribute to the show because we all have hard-earned wisdom we need to share. Join us every week at the same day and time. And tonight we're going to talk about overcoming attachments with spirit, so please feel free to participate or just to listen. So let me welcome Kat. Kat, how are you tonight?
I'm good, thank you.
Good.
Good to be here.
It's nice to have you, as always. What's going on in your world?
Well, can finally hit us. Thank goodness.
Good.
Finally, cool weather. I know you're coming out of horrible winter, but...
Well, actually, it's been a very mild winter. I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Has it?
Yes, it has. We've had very little snow. We just had one cold snap. And for the last 2 weeks, it's been really like early spring weather, even though we're still in March. So I've been very happy with it. And today was a little cooler, but the sun was shining, and it felt just lovely out there. So it's been a very pleasant winter as they go. And...
No, well,
that's not. Yeah. So, you've had a hot summer, though, haven't you?
No, we've had a stinker.
Yeah.
We have had a stinker. It's been many ways.
Yeah.
Yes, we're very happy for it.
Yeah. Well, the tonight's topic has kind of come out of something that we touched on last week. And I was just thinking of something that I had read years ago by Anthony DeMello, who was a Jesuit in India, and he was really kind of a revolutionary within the Catholic Church. He was not well thought of, but he was a very spiritual man, and he believed in a lot of things that I do and some things that I don't. But one of the things he said really struck me at the time, and since then I've come to embrace that it's true, and that is to be human is to be addicted, because we tend to fill ourselves up with things outside ourselves, whether or not they're drugs or alcohol or sex or gambling, whatever it is, food. We tend to attach ourselves to outer conditions that we think will make us feel happier, and we always come up on empty unless we use spirit to fill that great void that can exist within us. What do you think about that?
Yeah. Well, I agree. I think the reason that being and having an addiction, I'm going to gather my thoughts here. Where am I going? They're both to desire, human desire, the heart desire, and the old way of spiritual teaching was to kill the ego and kill desire. But then in wanting to do that, you're actually desiring it. So it's a conundrum, isn't it?
It is a conundrum.
You can't not desire. And the way to manifest things is through desire. You get the, as Abraham Hicks calls it, the contrast. You get the issue, the thing that you don't like. And you get the desire to change it, to have better. And then you seek that change. Where it becomes unhealthy is when you're seeking the good feeling that you get from getting that change and you're not enjoying the ebb and flow of contrast and appeasement, or satisfaction, I should say, contrast and satisfaction. So it really is a matter of allowing yourself to not have the good feeling and then having it again, because that's the life. So to me, that's where addiction really comes in, is in that desire to have that good feeling. And everybody wants to feel better. It's the human condition as well. We all want to feel better, and we're motivated by feeling better, even if those motivations and actions that we do are twisted and evil. In the end, when you start to question somebody who is acting in a bad way, why they did it, you'll tend to find that they will start to talk about ways that it would make them or others they think will feel better. So the best way for us forward, as far as that goes, is to focus on developing the heart and filling the heart with the inner being, with the spirit of yourself, and then feeling the flow of that being encourage you into places that will continuously refresh you, so that your desire for life and love is at the utmost forefront, and then everything else that is that doesn't help you falls away. Everything else that is a toxic desire falls away. And the
Are you still with me? Okay, it appears we've lost Kat, so I'm going to play my usual song that I like so much, and that is by Jennifer Fearon. It's called Throw It All Away. I'll have Kat back in a minute.
Trauma that can come from
was Jennifer Farron, and I have Kat back. Kat, are you still with me?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good.
Annoying having the phone drop out.
Uh-huh. You know, I don't remember exactly where you were, but I was really struck by what you were talking about as far as encouraging the heart from whatever desire you put out to the universe and then just enjoying things as you go along. The one thing that I found about desire is that I can obsess about it instead of just putting it out there and letting it go to wherever. And then I have a tendency to stay stuck and just obsess about whatever that desire is and think that I'm not going to be happy until I obtain whatever it is. And to me, that is difficult in attachment, almost as difficult as getting involved with an actual addiction. I don't know if you were coming to that point in your discussion, but does that make any sense to you, what I just said?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think that there are things that are valid in that too. You know, if you really, really need something to change in your life, of course you're going to be thinking about it.
Right.
Of course you're going to be wanting it.
Right.
But the trick is, you know, you can have thoughts of wanting it. That's fine, but start also thinking about, how do I make this happen? How do I make this happen? How do I make this? What's the fastest way to make this happen? Stop, ask my inner being. Because then you'll go into flow. Once you're in flow, everything will begin to work for you easier. If you're not in flow, things might work for you, but it'll be a lot harder.
Yeah, that action piece is very important, isn't it?
Yeah, because you could say, oh, I really want a new car, and just whinge and bitch about wanting a new car and do nothing about it. And, well, then the new car's not coming.
That's just magical thinking.
Yeah. And that's really well and good, but it's not going to affect you.
I was at a meeting today where somebody was talking about how easy it is for them to fall in the trap of saying, oh, I'll be so happy when I find a new relationship. Oh, I'll be so happy when I get that new car. Oh, I'll be so happy when I get that new job. And I think that is more magical thinking. But there's a fine line between desire and trying to fill yourself up with that outer condition instead of staying heart-centered, isn't there?
I think what you're talking about there is that there other people who do that, I'll be happy when I have a relationship or a new job, they're putting their happiness on someone or something else. They're putting the outcome of their own happiness on something else. They're not seeking happiness from within. They're not finding ways to be happy within themselves first. And that's where, eventually you might find a new relationship, but it might end up with a prick. You know, someone who's a real nasty and runs you down in front of people because you said, oh, I'll be happy when I get that relationship, but you weren't ever putting the investment into yourself. So that energy goes out to another person and you disempower yourself. So therefore, being disempowered, you attract people who like to push disempowered people around. So that's a bit of a hard one to get through to some people.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm.
Yeah. Well.
No, as a reader, I've had plenty of guys and women, but I went through a period of time when it was guys, and they'd ring me up and say, oh, it looks like my relationship's on the rocks. And this is literally the same style of phrasing that I get. It looks like my relationship's on the rocks. That's going to be over within a few months. Tell me, am I going to get someone else to have sex with? That was it. So therefore, their desire was only getting their end away, and it wasn't having a love experience.
That almost speaks to
so
an.
That was,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that was a prime example of somebody who is not listening to their inner being.
Right, right.
And focusing on the desire for life and love. And love in all aspects, loving the food you eat, loving the animals in the, you know, birds in the air, the animals that walk the loving, meeting other people who are also walking around loving life. So we've got to be very careful that we don't want to fill ourselves up with bodily desires, because they lead us nowhere. And when you look at the spiritual teachings, some of them religious, they frown upon bodily desires, but they don't see why. They just try and make you feel bad about it. The reason why is because you're not in alignment with your inner being. That's it. That it's not a, you know, you don't have to go out and start whipping yourself.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking before you got to that explanation. We do need to be in alignment with our hearts, or else we're going to attract things that are undesirable, quite possibly or quite probably.
Yeah. So I think we've gone off topic, though.
Yeah, we have. We have. That happens. Well, getting back to the topic, what would you like to say about it?
Well, what is a spirit attachment? What do you think a spirit attachment is?
A spirit attachment? I was thinking in terms of not attachment. A spirit attachment to me would be staying aligned with that center part of myself, and I think that's ultimately what I want to experience. It's the attachment to those outer conditions that I'd been talking about before, which is what I want to avoid, including these ideas that there's something outside of myself that's going to make me feel complete, that only spirit and heart can make me feel that way. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. I think we have two different ideas of what we were talking about.
Yeah. Because
I thought we were talking about spirits that attach to your aura.
Oh, no. Well, we could talk about that, too. And I will let you know, we do have a couple of callers on the line, too. So do you want to back up a little bit and talk?
No, I just don't understand why we're in the flow of conversation.
I guess that's what happens when we don't have a conversation before the show. We've gotten away from that, and I guess we need to do that. So at any rate, you know, thank you, listeners, for being flexible and allowing us to go with the flow, whichever way it flows. at any rate, where were we?
Well, you were talking about attachments to things that were not in alignment with your own spirit. Or were you talking about the great spirit with your God? Which way would that be?
Well, I think both, ultimately, because we are all one. I mean, our spirits are all connected to that great spirit that links us all. Are you still with me, honey?
Yeah. I thought you were going to say something else. Yeah, we are. But, in the Kabbalion, they talk about it all is mind. So, and everything has to happen in imagination first, everything, you know. The clothes you're wearing, imagine, before they were created. That is the pathway of action. All is mind first before all is physical. And physical is the final triumphant outcome of thought. Sometimes thoughts work and sometimes they don't. And so an individual mind is a character in a play, you know, as Shakespeare said, all the world is a stage and all the people are players, and he's absolutely correct. So a soul is a character in the great play, which is the divine mind having its experience. But as an author, you are, you've written many characters. One of those characters is a naughty nun. If I was playing the naughty nun, I would know that I was written by you, but I am not you.
Ooh,
yet
I like
your
that.
Essence is in me. Yet I cannot be David Clark. I must be myself. I must be the naughty nun. But David Clark's essence is within me. Just as genetic essence is within a child, yet the child is not the parent. And so that makes you on the leading edge of experience. So we are all one in the sense that in each of us, yet we are individuals and our own characters, and we have to learn to master ourselves. The self is the friend and the enemy, the greatest of friends and the greatest of enemies. And you have to make a choice. Which one are you going to listen to? Which one are you going to follow? Because the enemy will make you think it's your friend. But an enemy is an enemy. It never is your friend. It always has an agenda to hurt. And but the friend has no agenda but to be your friend. The only agenda it has is to love you and to watch you grow and to encourage you to grow. That's the agenda of a true friend. So we aspire to have friendships like that, and some of us have them and don't recognize them and throw them away because we're listening to our enemy, not our inner enemy, not our inner friend. So we don't see it in others. And some of us do see it in others and have wonderful, amazing friendships. So I would encourage people who are listening to stop and take a stock of what they are doing in their life that is feeding their soul, because that's the stuff to keep doing, the stuff that's truly feeding you, that brings you light and joy, and the desire to do it fills you with love. The stuff that does not feed your soul may give you some pleasure, but ultimately it brings you to destruction, and it's a destructive thing. So that's the inner enemy, and that's what we have to master. And the attachment to those things are the things that we need to let go of. It doesn't mean you can't enjoy or participate in things. Like, I've pretty much let go of alcohol. I don't drink. I used to have, you know, drinks a lot when I was younger. I was never an alcoholic, but I used to drink. As I've gone on my path, I've had less and less desire, and I've just lost the desire. I'll go out to the pub with friends for karaoke and have a few beers, a few laughs. Christmas time, I like to buy a carton of my favourite beer, and because I have my birthday and there's Christmas, and there's about six birthdays over at Christmas time, so it's just easy to have one carton of beer there. It lasts me about 2 or 3 months. it's not a I've got to have this every single day thing. It's not part of my package of pleasure. It's not to say other people shouldn't have it. It's that I've grown away from the desire for it. And that happens as you grow in your centeredness with your inner being. Desires of the flesh fall away. That doesn't mean you might not want to do it occasionally and enjoy it. You actually enjoy it more. And then you put it back and go, well, that was great. And I'll look forward to the next time in a few months when I have another beer. And then when you do, it's really nice. Oh, I'm really enjoying that. That's great. And then you know your limits because you don't have that desire. You know, we're bringing really, I guess, what we should have called the topic of the conversation today was about desire, really, because that's what you brought up in the beginning, don't you think, David?
Yeah, I do. And I was thinking about some of my own past when you were talking about alcohol. I used to drink alcoholically, and I identified myself as an alcoholic when I stopped drinking. But what I was really doing was medicating a part of myself that I didn't want to take a look at. I've been on this journey towards coming to my heart center, as I believe we all are on that journey. It's just that some people, for whatever reason, don't seem to make it there. And I related to you when you were talking about how alcohol is used in your life today. To me today, it's something that I occasionally do to enhance my experience, and I do not get drunk anymore. I enjoy an occasional beer or a glass of wine, but I do have a history of addiction, and I was using that to try to make myself feel better. And it didn't. It only fed things like shame and guilt and nothing that made me feel good, as you would say. I still have an addiction to cigarettes. I don't know if you knew that I smoked. And that's my primary addiction today. But there have been so many other things that I've been addicted to in my past. Sex was one of the big bugaboos. I've had some occasional problems with eating. I had alcohol, as I mentioned. I had some experience with drugs. Those are just some of the things that I've used to try to fill myself up with. And I really liked what you were saying about making that analogy to the Great Spirit by what Shakespeare had said. I'm not sure where I'm going with this, but we do have a caller on the line. I'd be interested in hearing if he has any thoughts.
Yes.
Let's see. Maybe he's just listening. This is a friend of mine. This is Al.
Hello.
Hi there. Is there anything you'd like to say, Al?
Well, I tuned in a little late, so, you know, I missed maybe the first 10 minutes. I guess when I was thinking about it, too, I was thinking more about your inner self and being aligned with your inner self is how I had first thought about the topic also. And I've also had a history of the addictions with alcohol. I used to smoke. I stopped in my, it's been over 30 years now since I smoked. It's been a long time. But I still have things that pull at me. And coffee is the one that coffee and food are probably the two I struggle with now. I've given up everything that's most harmful to my health, but I still feel those kind of pulls, and I do find it helpful if I can take a moment and center myself. I did notice that what was successful for me when I was trying to stop drinking and smoking was just centering myself and being aware of what I was feeling in the moment. because I realized that there were unacknowledged feelings there that I wasn't paying attention to. And when I took a moment to notice what those feelings were, I could think about the desire a little differently in that moment than just letting the addiction just carry me forward without stopping and pausing and noticing what was really going on for me. And I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name because I didn't come in on the beginning of the program. Could you tell me your name again?
Pat.
Hello? Pat, I'm sorry, Pat.
Cat. Cat. Cat with a C.
Pat. Oh, Cat. I'm sorry, Cat. Yes. How would you, you know, because your philosophy about this was a little bit differently, and I wondered how you would see something like that. How would you frame all of that?
Well, I think that what you've done is excellent. I think stopping and being in the moment, the mindfulness is very, very important. And then you recognize, well, actually, I have these unacknowledged feelings, and that's why I'm desiring to reach for substance, whatever that may be, because the outer self wants to continue to gloss over the unacknowledged feeling by using something else to give the senses something to focus on. And it works, you know, that is exactly, it is, when you think about the ego being a child of 0 to 7 years old, it's really all it's to do is survive and feel better.
Yes.
And you can't be angry at your own ego for seeking something that will make it feel better, because it doesn't understand. It needs someone else to organize its feelings. It, you know, a child will cry because they dropped something on their toe or somebody made a loud noise, and they can get out of control with their crying, and because they don't understand their feelings. So they need to be picked up and held and hushed and medicated and made feel better. So you get that from just the beginning of your life. That's how you reach out. Somebody will hold me. If I've got something on my toe and I'm in a lot of pain, I'll get pain relief. They will comfort me and I'll feel better. As an adult, you may not have somebody who will, you know, kiss your boo-boo better and give you some medicine and sit and cuddle you and talk you down. So you go and reach for that coffee, or you go and reach for that alcohol or cigarette, and that is your surrogate parent helping you to feel better. So becoming aware, as you have, and saying, hang on, I'm really desiring that cup of coffee, but actually when I think about why I'm desiring it, it's because I feel lonely, or whatever the unacknowledged feeling is, you can then unpack it, which is a heartfelt thing to do. And in doing so, you'll actually make the ego feel better, because the ego then has its feelings sorted, and it desperately needs its feelings sorted. It doesn't understand how to do it itself. So by being the adult self within your own self, you're unpacking your feelings and you're acknowledging them, and maybe you need to go and seek advice from a psychologist or a counselor to help you unpack your feelings. But you unpack your feelings and acknowledge them and learn from them, and it settles your ego down. My idea of self-mastery is not to kill the ego. I don't believe in that. I believe in settling the ego down and making it feel comfortable and secure so that it goes to sleep. And I feel that it is necessary. It comes up at times and we need it. It comes up when we need to survive. It comes up when we need to self-express, and if we allow the ego to come out in positive ways, it can actually be quite an amazing, exciting thing, because it will fully click in and align with the heart and the soul, and you'll have a fully embodied human being, a fully divine being. But that fully divine being is completely in self-mastery, and that animalistic, comfort-seeking survival mechanism is at the bottom of the three aspects of self and firmly stays there. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does make sense to me. When you talked about, you know, as adults, maybe not having people in our lives that would have provided us with that kind of comfort that we had as little children and whatnot. A big part of my growth as an adult has been having a community of people that I regularly talk to and spend time with that are, and you noticed, you said something that I really liked earlier about true friends versus enemies who pretend to be friends but always have an agenda. And, you know, the people I have in my life now are true friends. They're people that have my welfare at their center of their heart, and I have their welfare at the center of my heart. And we genuinely take the time to listen to one another. You can kind of tell when somebody's got an agenda because they're not really listening to you. They're kind of thinking about what they're going to say to you next, because they're kind of caught in their ego of, you know, that whatever they're going to say is going to be impressive or whatnot. But people that are really your friend take the time, spend a lot of time just listening and then offering something from themselves when it seems appropriate. So I feel like I have those kind of people in my life that you describe. But you also seem to be talking about it as an aspect of our inner self, a friend versus a, you know, I wondered if you could talk about that a little more. You seem to be talking about looking within ourselves.
Yes.
And there being friends, but there also being a part of ourself that we thought we were being a friend of ourself, but we were really enemies.
Yeah, the frenemy situation. It's something that I think the psychologists are very aware of. I certainly was a psychologist who raised the idea of it to me. So that's where I learned about it, was from somebody who was talking about it to me while I was going through a period of time after I had my daughter. I had brain swelling and I lost some capabilities with mathematics, and I had to relearn to add numbers, and I still struggle at times with it when I'm tired. I was beating up on myself that I'd suddenly become stupid. And they sent me off to see a psychologist to sort of stop that and help me to cope with my new situation. And one of the things that she said was that your mind is a friend and an enemy. And the reason it is there is the enemy aspect is because that's that voice, that inner voice that tells you you're no good, you're not good enough. You're fat, mm-hmm. You're ugly, your clothes don't, you know, you're not, something wrong with you. All of those things that the mind, that part of the mind will shout at you, they're actually, when you really think about it, words from others that you've heard over years and years and years. Because mm-hmm. The true self will never, ever say that to you. The true self doesn't care. And when I explored why I was beating myself up because I couldn't do simple addition anymore, I realized it was because of going through school and the nastiness other kids had towards kids who struggled with math. So mm-hmm. I I thought, oh, wow, you know, I'm bringing a high school experience into my adult life here. And I can't help it. You know, I nearly lost my life having my child. And my brain swelled up, and obviously parts of it got damaged. And luckily, it was a part that stopped me from calculating numbers, not a part that stopped me from having reason or logic or the ability to learn other things. So, you know, it didn't change my personality or anything like that. You know, I had to reframe. And when you reframe, you shut that part of the brain that's just recycling junk from others. Because it can be quite loud. It can overtake you. And, you know, I'm not perfect. I still have that voice telling me off even now, you know, because I've gone on a journey after I had my daughter of having to take drugs that kept me alive, that made me put on a lot of weight. And then recently I was assaulted. Somebody, the person who did that caused me a big setback, which meant I couldn't work out anymore, which meant I started to put on weight again. So that voice put me off. And you've got to rein that in. You've got to say, you know what, I asked that person to assault me and cause me to have to now be inactive. I'm in control. Shut up, stupid voice. And you just start focusing on the positive again. Start focusing on the good. The enemy within is only loud if you let it. It's like anything, you know. Another person can have power over you, but only if you truly let them. If you don't let them have power over you, and I'm a Scot, so, you know, I'm speaking this from an ancestral voice as well. We didn't, even in the torture chamber, we didn't let them have power over us because they couldn't access our mind. And that's the thing. You don't necessarily have to let anyone have power over you. So why would you let that enemy voice within, that's just toxic verbs from other people, be something that's the loudest when there's this loving voice within you as well? And the more you focus on that, the louder that becomes and the easier your life is. Because if you focus on the loving voice, the emotions don't beat you up. But if you focus on the unloving voice, the emotions destroy you. Does that make sense to you?
It does. And I have recently been calling up that positive voice to do self-talk to myself with a positive, realistic, rational, well, not all rational, but, you know, not the illogical, crazy stuff that the other voice can say to you. I've been calling up that more rational one. And it's been, a lot of countries are having this problem with the coronavirus, and it's stirring up a lot of fears for people. And, and I've been having some anxiety around that, you know, so I've had to kind of be pulling in this part of myself that can think logically about this and what's really happening in the present moment, and not that fearful one without any logic. I'm not trying to discount emotions. They're important too, but it's the illogic of this situation, the logic of that voice, that is making my emotions go a little crazy sometimes. So I've been trying to pull in that person to do that. But, you know, you talked about ancestral voices, or even just those old voices from when we were kids, you know, people, things they said to us, and they got instilled in us at such an early age, and come back and try to do that negative self-talk to us that's still within us. I just forgot what I was going to say, but oh, the ancestral voice you talked about. You know, this whole thing with epigenetics that they've talked about, where someone's life experiences can actually flip genes to become expressed in a certain way and actually even get passed down to our descendants. Yeah. Is that what you were talking about, those as part of those ancestral voices? Or more?
I suppose so. I do know that the resilience, if you got seven ancestors ago, were, you know, dug their heels in and said that they were going to be resilient within themselves, they passed that DNA on, and it fortifies stronger and stronger and stronger with each generation. So you find, and that's in the cortex, I think, the part of the brain that has the basic functioning. I think that's called the cortex. It's been a while since I've looked at the brain. So you can actually find aspects of the genetics that are ancestral that are affecting you now in the operating system that is the brain. But also, you know, I think the ancestral voice is a little bit in your blood. It's in your spirit. You know, I'm a Celt, and the wisdom of the Celt is that your true magic is in your blood. And, you know, if you were to follow a magical lifestyle, being a lifestyle that works with the elements and works with the universe in an energetic fashion, it would be better to follow one that flows with your bloodline than one you just fancy, you know. You wanted to become a wizard, then go with your bloodline and what pagan practice they do, rather than maybe one if you were not born, you don't have a Asian ancestral line, follow theirs, follow the ancestral line of your own. So you can take qualities from them and learn from them, and then add that. The true power is in your So there's that, but they, and I think that's probably what I was drawing on, because, you know, it's no secret that the Scots were persecuted for hundreds of years by the English, and they never gave up their own spirit, and they never said, we will join this union with you because we will subjugate ourselves to you. They said, we'll join this union with you, this is my understanding anyway, because it's financially viable for us to do so. And it fortifies our people, and you've stopped trying to attack us now. So, but all the years when they were trying to attack them, they never turned around and said, hey, yeah, we'll subjugate ourselves to you. They never once did that. And they didn't do it with the Romans. And they didn't do it with the, you know, when the Scots were the Picts, they didn't do it with the Celts that came over from Europe either. That is a firm bloodline of standing your ground and thinking for yourself. You know, and I'm proud of that, and I tell people to think for themselves. And especially with spiritual practice, there's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of religious and spiritual information. You need to make your mind up for yourself, think for yourself, draw on your own conclusions, talk about them with others and see if they, you know, bouncing them off makes sense to somebody else who you respect and knows respects you, but don't follow the crowd and just blindly go where everyone else is. They might just lead you into a ditch. Yeah,
that's a powerful bloodline that I'm proud of, and that's the magic that's in that bloodline. Yeah.
Well, I could listen to the two of you all night. This is a great discussion. It's going a bit off topic, but it's wonderful. What were you going to say, Al?
Oh, I was just going to say, I've never, you know, I'm not a religious person, and I guess my spirituality, if I were to have one, it has always been based in more oneness with nature and with the universe, and feeling that we're all a part of one another. So I've never followed. I guess I've never liked the restrictions that come with religious beliefs that don't allow freer thought and letting people self-determine for themselves what their beliefs are and where their personal journey is. So I liked what you said. And especially about, I don't know what to think about myself in terms of the ancestry. I have a number of different ethnicities. I'm Irish, English, Dutch, and German. So I've done, I do this peer counseling, and they've been encouraging us to work on our ancestry. So I've you know, had spent some time on my Irish ancestry and what the English have did to the Irish, but also in doing my ancestry on the English side, I've become so aware of how many of my ancestors were laborers or servants or they ended up in one of these, what did they used to call them when you were poor and couldn't pay your bills? But, you know, I'm very aware of what happens to the poor English in that kind of class system. It feels like they did kind of to their, not to the same extent, but in different ways, but they did to their own people who were unprivileged what they also did to the Irish. I want to take that back a little bit because it's a different experience, and I know it's not good to compare those. I guess my point is just to say that they haven't treated their own people very well either. So, I guess
so
I carry a little bit of all of that.
Very powerful. Yeah, and you've got Celt there with the Irish and the German. You've got Dutch, you've got the Vikings, and you know, they're very powerful people. And the English, they're the Anglos. When you look into the mystical side of the Anglos with the Glastonbury, Avalon, the King Arthur, the magical storytellers, the deeper love of nature that they had, you can see that they've got quite a rich history as well. And, you know, they did treat people badly, but they did become the leaders of the world. They were empirical. And that power is within you as well. Now, there's idiots everywhere. There's also good in everyone.
That's true, yeah.
You know?
Yes.
You know, I'm sure I've got ancestors who are absolute twits, but they would have learned some life lessons, and that blood is in me too. The idiot side is in me as well, and the good is in me too. And choose to always focus on the good, even when it's real difficult and I can't see it. And that, maybe that's when I'll reach out to somebody and go, and then they'll help me focus on the good, and I'll come back to, okay, well, this is the good, and that's the baseline, really. And we're talking about obsession with addiction, so. In my practice as a life coach, I come across people who have addictions quite a bit, and I tell them, well, you've got an addictive personality. Let's replace negative addiction with one positive. So yeah, let's replace, say, drinking soft drinks with drinking water and becoming addicted to the taste of water. Let's taste different types of water, and we may go and get several different bottles of water from different companies and find one that's sweet to them, that water. So you replace one way with another. You don't need to beat yourself up. You just need to find a positive replacement, and the flow comes because you're in alignment with the love of it. Just bringing it all back full circle to the topic, the original topic of the show there.
Well, that's
sorry,
a good place to end, I think. I loved what you said about the good, Kat, and Al, I loved when you were talking about feelings, and I think the two of you carried the show very nicely, the second half of the show, and I appreciate both of your inputs. And now let's just take a moment to reflect and pause and listen to our inner beings. And so I'd ask everybody to just take a long, deep breath and pause for a moment and then let it go. And repeat that three more times. And if you haven't already done so, I invite you to close your eyes if you're comfortable with that. If not, focus on a spot in the room. And as you continue to breathe, breathe in, I am enough. And breathe out, I am love. Breathe in, I am enough. Breathe out, love. And now imagine yourself sinking into a wonderfully delicious hot bath, just the perfect temperature. Feel the sensuality of the water as it surrounds you, and immerse yourself in the bath and feel the water covering every bit of your body. And then raise your head out of the bath and relax and know that all is well. You are enough. You came from love and you are love. And that's all you ever really wanted for yourself. That's all you really need for yourself is love. And now, when you're ready, raise yourself out of that warm womb of the bathtub and come out into the light of day. Feeling refreshed, feeling whole, feeling complete, because you are enough. You are love personified in the person that you are. And that's all you ever truly wanted. That's all you need to be. All the rest is but illusion. And so when you're ready, open your eyes and take in your surroundings and feel a sense of peace, knowing that you are enough, that you are love, and that's all you need. And so we come to a close. I wish everybody a good night. Good night, Al. Good night, Kat.
Good night, David.
Good
night, Kat.
Thank you for joining us, Al.
Good night, Al.
Yeah, thank you both for a wonderful discussion. And it's nice to hear you for the first time, Kat. I hadn't listened to you before, and I think I will join in again.
Good. We'll love to have you
now. Thank you.
Okay. Good night, everybody.
Good night.